Hello and welcome to another comedian's interview for my blog, A Rich Comic Life. My name is Richard Gill and my guest today is one of my favourite comedians. It's Mr. Matt Richardson. Yes! Hello! Oh.
The thing is, Rich, being one of your favourites, like, I'm not sure, I think that's quite a broad group of I don't, you know, as lovely as it is to be referred to as one of your favourites, I do follow you on Instagram and Twitter, and I do
very
and I've never found an interview or a review of the comedian film where you've disliked them. I think you find something to enjoy in them, even if they were terrible, even if, like, you've come to see me a lot, and I think, if I had a horrible gig, I could rely that you would come up afterwards and go, well, no, this bit was good, and this bit was good. You see the good in everything.
Well, you're very kind. When I, my blog is just celebrating 3 years. I can't believe the success of it. But when I started it, I thought to myself, I'm not a reviewer, I'm not a diarist, I'm not a reporter. I'm a member of the audience out for a good time, and I call it an enthuse. It's a whole enthuse to such a fantastic art form, and I just think
more people review from that perspective of going, I'm going to go and talk about it, but I'm going to go and try and have a good time, rather than most reviewers who go to be clever and sort of pull it apart, whereas you leave going, did I enjoy myself? Yes, therefore it was good. And I think that's all that's all this should be, really.
Exactly, because you're there to, I think you're there to enjoy yourself. You're certainly not there to criticize, because I was talking in another interview about about sitting in the audience, and I always used to sit at the back of an audience because I was terrified, but I knew I had the ammunition with the laugh. But then over the last the last 2 or 3 years, I went to the front, and it's just the best thing, because you can join in. You can, the comedians are looking around for people who are so enthusiastic about the art form, and it's fantastic. And you're a classic example.
It is a lifesaver having you in an audience. It's really fascinating because you do get people in audiences where, say, a gig's a little bit tricky. And I know that, like, you know, you, especially where you go frequently, Always Be Comedy isn't that kind of gig. But you're doing a gig that's difficult. If there's one person in the room with a great laugh who has no inhibitions about it and is happy just to have a good time and enjoy themselves, it's infectious. So I think, you know, because people go, oh, well, he's really laughing, I'm actually enjoying it, maybe I should laugh a bit more. Like, so when I go and see other comics, if I go to, like, an Edinburgh show or something like that, like, I'm a real laugher. And even if, like, I think the gig's tough but they're really good, I will laugh more than I normally would to try and, like,
almost like, it up a bit.
Please be better. Like, you're great. Don't be discouraged. And you've got that laugh. Oh my God, your laugh is the best thing. It's famous in comedy.
Well, thank you so much.
There isn't a comedian in the country who you'd mention Always Be Comedy and they'd go, Rich in the front row with the great laugh. It's sort of like they both go together, you know.
Well, that's so nice of you to say. It's so good. What we're going to do for the next 45 minutes or so, I want to ask you about your comedy career. So we're going to go right back, my friend. And how did you become a comedian in the first place?
I became a comedian. So I was at university. I was living at home and commuting to Oxford Brookes. And I hate it. It wasn't for me. I didn't really want to go to university, but, you know, you kind of all, that's how life is set up, isn't it? And I thought, oh, I'm going to try and do one thing that I really like. I'm going to try and get something out of university. And there was a little comedy night, and I loved stand-up. So I just signed up to do that. And a little open mic comedy night they had at the university. And like, and this was sort of, this was at the real peak of, like, comedy being everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, there was like 70 people at this open mic night where it was just students giving it a go. Like, and it was, I just did that, and that was the beginning.
Wow, 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 that's brilliant. And so was that your, so your first gig was at university, is that right?
Yeah, in the student union at Oxford Brookes.
Yeah. And as well as a comedian, you were also a radio DJ. And
yes,
a TV, and you've been on the TV as well. You've been TV presenter.
Yes.
Which do you enjoy the most, and why? Are they different? Presumably, they are different mediums.
You know what? I think it depends which one I'm doing the most of.
Yeah.
Although I've no particular desire to go back to radio.
Right.
I kind of liked it.
You were very good on it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So the problem with radio is it is a political world. So you're in an office every day, and by the end of it, that was tedious. Like, everyone fighting over things like Chris Evans didn't like me, which is why I ended up leaving, because he wanted me off the station, and like right. all that stuff, which you just don't have to bother with in comedy. That those kind of politics don't affect you at all, because it's very individual. So I probably got badly stung by the radio by the end, so
right.
I wouldn't rush to go back into a radio station. But I really like making telly. I think it's really good, and it's nice when you're doing something with lots of people working on it, because it's a collaboration and you don't get that much in stand-up. And then when I'm doing loads of telly, I think, oh god, I'd just love to go and do some comedy.
So it's just dependent on the mood and everything.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much. Like, you know, yeah. I'm kind of like itching to go and do some stand-up again now, because I've had a year not really doing yeah. it. Whereas before, I'd kind of had like 8 months, 6 gigs a night, like, and I hadn't done that for a couple of years. And like, it's quite hard, especially when I was like first starting out and I was in my early 20s, and I was single and it didn't really matter. Like, I loved gigging every night, because yeah. I had nothing else to do. Whereas
yeah.
as you get a life, as you get a bit older, you know, you settle down and you want to be around the people you like.
Yes,
and
yeah.
comedy doesn't give you that luxury very often.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Because if I was married, or I couldn't do as much, I couldn't go and see as much comedy as I wanted to. No. I don't think, unless my wife was into comedy herself, you know. But I find it staggering for myself that I'm actually going to see so much, because to me it's like a drug. You know, it's like when you say, I want to go and yeah. do it now. I want to go and do the comedy again now. You do, and you fuel off it. And, you know, certainly a comedian like yourself, who's so confident on stage, your enthusiasm, mm. you say it to me about the audience, it's like you on stage, bounding around the stage, loving it. You can see you're totally enjoying yourself.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I do find, if I'm a bit fatigued with comedy, for whatever reason, if, say, I've been doing loads of other stuff in the week, so like I'm just tired, or if I'm just sort of not in the right headspace for it, because I'm not a writer, I'm a performer, like I'm much yeah. better at performing than writing. So if I'm not totally into it, then yeah, I don't have as good a gigs, because I think like a lot of my thing is, god, he looks like he's having a great time. You know, that's my whole thing of comedy is, I want people to go, god, he's clearly having the best time ever, so we should all have the best time. And I agree, it is infectious.
I can't be there every night, mate, but when I do go, I do have the greatest time.
It is, you know what I mean? And I think it's a crime in comedy that, because yeah. we all do a lot of it, and I've been doing it, you know, 11 years,
wow.
and I still don't feel like I'm someone that's been around for that long.
Yeah.
You do end up kind of going, oh god, I've got to go and do another bloody gig. And it's really nice having a year off, like, because I have done some gigs over the last few months, and I was watching it, like, when I was on, you know, when other acts were, and I was like, this is an amazing thing to come and do 5 days a week. Like, people pay good money to come and see this, and I've seen every comedian you can imagine for free hundreds of times.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you do lose that little bit of sparkle and magic about it sometimes. So it's nice to sort of take a step back and go, I would have killed people to do this as my job. And then you kind of, you know, you lose the glamour of it a bit. And then you go, oh, I can't believe I'm going to bloody Reading to do a gig. Even though there was a time where that would have been the highlight of my life.
I saw on your last tour, you had Carlisle listed. They would love you.
You know what? So I've only ever done Carlisle once.
Yeah.
That tour I did Carlisle. And it was a great gig. I've never done it on a tour before. I don't know why. It's one of those weird things where you don't put the tour together yourself, like someone else, like there's a company that do it. And some companies put certain venues in and others. But the weird thing with Carlisle, you mentioned, I don't like staying in travel lodges and things like that. I always try and stay in like a little B&B or a country hotel if I can, just because it's a bit more interesting. And in Carlisle, I was like, I'm going to go and try and find a nice sort of out-of-town hotel, because I was driving to somewhere else the day, like Manchester, I think, the day after.
Yeah.
And I stayed in this hotel that was this kind of old house in a village outside of it, this big old house. And I was like, I kind of got there, and it was deserted. There was no one around. And I checked in, and I was like, oh, this is a really interesting, unusual place. And the woman went, oh, yeah, we've been on Most Haunted more than any other building in the country. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I was like, so is there a bar or anything? She went, well, we've not opened the bar today because you're the only person staying here.
No way.
Oh, great. And she went, and also, because there's no one around, we've not hired anyone to do the night shift. So if you need anything, just ring me. I live about a mile away. So I was like, so you're leaving me in a haunted hotel by myself all night. Thanks, great, lovely. I mean, nothing happened, obviously, but I didn't see
it. But you were terrified.
It's amazing that when you're by yourself in a place like that, you very quickly start to think that ghosts might be real.
That is incredible.
Yeah, it was so weird. Like, and I kind of then, and I sort of realised then, I was like, maybe I should start staying in, like, Premier League.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a problem.
Where on earth am I?
Stop trying to find, like, cool little interesting hotels.
Yeah. To date, what has been your best and worst comedy gig, if you have them?
You know what? I'd say, look, the problem is, like, best is easier to pick than worst.
Yeah. But you never know what's going to happen. That's the magic of it, I suppose.
So, you know what? My worst ever gig happened a year ago. Just over a year ago. So it's January 2021. December 2019.
Right.
I was doing, for the kind of the first time in years, I was doing the Christmas gig. So I'm assuming most people who are going to be watching this are into comedy. But at Christmas, the big kind of like chain comedy clubs, it's all work Christmas dues. It's like, you know, big offices where one person's gone, we're going to go to comedy for the Christmas due.
Yeah.
And they're awful gigs, right? They're horrible. And years ago, we used to get paid more. So it was fine. Not anymore. But anyway, I digress from the story. I was at Just the Tonic, Birmingham, which is a tricky gig at the best of times.
Right.
I get on stage and there is maybe 60 people in, right? It's not busy, even though I'd done it the week before, weirdly, and it was packed and it was fine for Christmas. Like, we all did really well, like, we all got through it. So I went back a week later thinking, this will be all right. There's 60 people in, I'm comparing. I go on stage, and of those 60 people, 40 of them are one company that are on a works do, like some local company, and they're all sat there. And I am, they're not even sat there, they're all stood up talking as I've been introduced. I kind of stand on stage and I go, look, I'm not starting the gig until you all sit down and shut up. Like, it's disrespectful. We're all at work. Like, you know, come on. Like, there's other people here. There are couples in. Please, can you sit down, this group? Kind of half of them did. And then there were these guys, like, in their 50s. Like, they weren't, like, young people showing off. Like, they were, like, established at this company. And they start being really horrible. Like, they start just yelling insults. And I start kind of saying things back, you know. And the problem is, you know, the assumption that comedians love hecklers isn't true. Because,
It must throw you.
What? Like, I find it really tedious, heckling. So if someone says something, like, I talk to the audience a lot in my shows because people will say something funny that you can then improvise on, which is great.
Yeah.
But people who just heckle at a club like that, you've heard it all a million times. Like, none of it's interesting, none of it's funny. It's just eating into your time and eating into everyone else's evening. So I just find it a really disrespectful thing to do for the other people who paid.
Well, you're not there to listen to them. You're there to listen to you.
And the thing is, like, I can do it. I can slam hecklers all day. I've been doing this for a decade. Like, I can do it, but I just don't want to. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be the same as you going to the garage with your car and going, you know what? I know you're doing my engine, but while you're here, I've just punctured a few of my tyres because I know you love that. Like, it's so easy to deal with if you know how to do it.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be doing that. You want to be doing something a bit more interesting. So anyway, I'm on stage and I kind of, these guys have been quite aggressive and not even like jovial, but they've been quite aggressive with it. And I'm just going like, you know, fuck off, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And this guy goes, why don't you tell us a fucking joke? Like, really, like, aggressively. And I kind of went, look, mate, having met you for the last 3 minutes, I can assure you that I was kind of like, you're, you know, not a very nice guy, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I'm a nicer guy than you. I was like, when you go home and you ask your wife how her evening has been and she's been fucking a yoga instructor all evening, then you'll realise that I'm right about it. So, like, it was kind of
Brilliant.
That's not exactly what I said, but it was along those lines. It was quite funny as well. It got a laugh.
Yeah. And he, that's what you want.
He lost. And also, like, it wasn't like out of nowhere I've insulted his relationship. Like, this is like 5 minutes of this, and I'm like, please, like, just sit down, let's get on with the show. And he absolutely lost the plot.
Wow.
Like, he was really bad, like really aggressive, like coming, he was kind of like getting up to the stage, like trying to get into my face. And I was on stage, and it's quite a big room, and I can't really see anyone around. And I'm like, I think I'm going to get beaten up here. And bear in mind, I haven't even done like the rules of a gig yet. Like, this is before we'd even said, like, turn your phones off. I'm on stage, and I can't, sorry, this is such a long story.
No, it's fine, carry on. Stage,
and I'm kind of talking, sort of like, kind of, this guy's threatening me, and I'm kind of saying, I'm sort of trying to keep, like, I'm a bit worried, but I'm trying to kind of, how do I say it? You know, I'm trying to, like, keep a bit of a front.
So I, yes.
Because like, I'm saying in front of people, like, I don't want to go, oh, God, I'm really sorry. And also, like, I should be sorry. He was a dick. He starts to threaten me and stuff. And I'm like, look, mate, it's a comedy club. You've been disrespectful. You've been awful. Like, everyone else wants the gig to start. You're being a pain. And then the security guard comes in. This guy comes in, the security guard, and sort of taps him on the shoulder to kind of go, look, mate, come on, let's just calm down and chill out, yeah? As he taps him on the shoulder, the guy turns around and hits the security guard.
No way!
He hits him, and then he headbutts him.
Wow.
You know when you watch a Western and a bar fight breaks out in a Western film? That basically happens. So all these people, because then someone who worked at his company, and it turns out this guy was the managing director of this company, right?
No,
it wasn't like some lucky, like it was his company.
Wow.
So to pull him off the security guard, he turns around and hits someone on his own company. Like, tables and chairs are flying. It's wild. More security come up from other venues next door and things.
Oh my God.
Like, what the fuck is going on? In the end, the police were called and he got arrested for GBH.
Wow! Good grief! That's incredible!
And I was kind of like sat in the dressing room like, well, I don't know what to really do about this. This is, like, the gig didn't happen after that, of course. Like, it got cancelled. But this woman came up to me afterwards and she was like, that's your fault. And I was like, how is it not, like, I was like, I asked him to be,
I shouldn't
be expected to deal with that level of abuse at my job.
Yeah.
This woman, she said she worked at a school. And I was like, if a parent came into school and said the things to you that they said to me when I was on stage at the beginning, would you think that was acceptable behaviour by them? And she was like, no, it was abhorrent. And I was like, well, then... I was like, there we go. And I was like, and I'm not a teacher, so I can say whatever the fuck I like back to
them.
Like, that's not a problem for me. And I sort of sat with this woman for a bit and, like, explained to her why it wasn't my fault that all this had happened and why I stand by how I acted. And in the end, she was like, look, yeah, I think you are in the right, actually, fair enough. And I was like, yeah, as you should be, because I am. Yeah, that's my worst ever gigging experience. I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And
unreal.
It was someone who works with the guy came up and he went, oh, that's my boss, and we all think he's a cunt. So, I was like, well, you don't think he is.
So you were in the right.
I was like, look at his behaviour this evening. Like, the guy's clearly an awful man.
That is incredible.
That's my worst one.
And
that was a year ago, yeah.
Wow. And your best one's the next one.
And my best one ever, it's probably one of two. Either it's the first time I played my hometown, Didcot in Oxfordshire.
Brilliant.
And we've got like a little theatre, which is like 300 seats. And I do it on tour every time I go on tour, because it's basically the only venue I can guarantee selling out. So the first time I ever sold that out for a full show is probably one of the best gigs of my life. And
Brilliant.
Also because it meant a lot, because it was my hometown.
Of course,
you know,
yeah.
Lots of people I knew were there, so that would be a highlight. Or I'd say the second time I did Latitude on the main comedy stage.
Wow.
I had a really, really good gig.
So that would be in front of thousands then?
Yeah, like 5,000 or 6,000 maybe.
Wow.
Like, that's a big old stage.
I'm daunting. Sure
you've been to Latitude, but
it's
a big old stage, yeah. And I've done it twice, and I've had a good gig both times, but the second time I did it, someone was on after me who was really famous.
Right.
God, I forget who it is, but so I basically played to a packed thing because people were waiting for the famous person. So that one.
And I bet
so
you
I
killed
got,
it.
I got a captive audience who love comedy. And because festivals, you can be the victim of... it not being very busy quite a lot. So I've done, it's the same actually, the first time I ever did V Festival, so what, 2014? And I'd just done the Extra Factor the year before, and V Fest is a very ITV2 crowd.
Right.
And I packed the tent for me, and that was really exciting. But I was on at a really good time. I was, the tent was in a good place. Like, I wasn't clashing with any big bands. I got lucky that I was probably the thing on that people knew.
Yeah.
The second time I did V, I was on at 11 a.m. and I played it to about 500 people in a tent built for 4,000.
Wow.
Not even 500, maybe 100 people.
Wow.
Because I was on at the wrong time.
Yeah,
the
tent
moved, like, at a festival, like, it can go either way, depending on how lucky you are
with all
of those other things. Like, I saw Emo Phillips at Latitude years ago.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it was really empty for him because a big band were on.
Right.
And he really struggled with the noise and the band being on. If you catch it just right at a festival, they're amazing. But I've done some shockers as well.
I'm moving on to this because I, as you know, I go to Edinburgh every year when it's on, and hopefully, please God, it's going to be on in 2021. I've done 16 of them, and I go for a week. It's all shows. I need a holiday when I come back. But I just love seeing everybody doing their thing, and I saw Emo Phillips there. And you're right, it's about the timing that they get and the audience that they get, because I wanted to ask you about your first Edinburgh. How were you, nervy? Were you daunted by it all?
You know what? So I was meant to do Edinburgh in 2013.
Right.
And I cancelled it to do X Factor. I got that job and didn't go. And so basically, I kind of picked my team, and I'm not a comic that sells well in Edinburgh or does particularly well. Like, I get reviewed.
Genuinely, mate, I find that amazing.
Yeah, but you know what? Because Edinburgh is something you have to put the time in up there.
Right.
And I brutally never really have. So I've done two Edinburghs full. I've seen both of them.
Like,
I did.
Slash.
Slash, which was a good run, was an okay run, but I lost a load of money. And then last year I did like a work in progress show, like half old, half new, at the Tron.
That's right. I remember you heard the laugh.
With the Tron, like, I picked that and I didn't spend any money on advertising or anything. I went like a bit low key,
right.
Whereas when I did Slash, I was in a 130-seat room.
That was the Pleasance?
No, I was at the Gilded Balloon.
Oh, the Gilded Balloon. Yeah, that's right.
And I sold out of the weekends, but in the week I was doing like 50 people, which is fine. Like, some people would kill for that in Edinburgh. But I lost £9,500.
Wow.
So, you know, whereas last year I probably didn't lose much. Maybe I lost £1,000, but it wasn't like, but I was really low key.
They always say that you go to Edinburgh to be seen and for the exposure and everything. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, you know what? I think probably. But once again, because I kind of picked my team, that I'm not on things like Mock the Week and Live at the Apollo. No. I do like presenting stuff on telly a lot, and I'm not necessarily a comic when I'm on telly. It means that, like, I'm not like an Edinburgh darling, and those are the shows that book you up there, not the kind of things I do. You know, not to host Celebrity Haunted Mansion, they're not going to Edinburgh to look at comedians. Do you know what I mean? Which is a show I did for a couple of years.
I know, I saw it.
One of my favourite jobs I've ever done. I absolutely loved that. But no one saw it.
I thought it was all right.
You're a real gem. You've got to go every year. You've got to build an audience. And I didn't go for my first 7 years. And by the time I was up there, I think if I'd have gone in that 2013, when I was kind of, it would be my first hour, I would have been new and exciting. You could be pushed back. I'm not new and exciting anymore. I've been around for ages. So I wouldn't go back to Edinburgh now unless I had a really different show from what I normally do.
Yeah.
I think that'd be the only... I go up and I talk about penises really fast for like an hour. I've been doing that for years now. So I don't and also, like you say, it's not necessarily about the ticket sold. It's about the industry. And like, industry people are like, we know what he does and we know if we like it or not. So there's no point going to see him again and again unless I'm going to do something different.
That's really interesting. A really interesting answer, that, because... because I've been going for so long, I've seen so many comedians grow, not only at the Edinburgh Fringe, but elsewhere and everything. And that's half the reason why I go. It's wonderful to see them blossom, you know. So it's interesting what you're saying.
And I think, you know what, I think I don't like Edinburgh either. Like, no. I find it a really stressful month and a bit lonely. And I'm not in, like, there's like cliques of comedians.
Right.
And I'm not in, like, the cool Edinburgh clique. So I find it, like, a bit like I'm up there and I'm not in the gang. So I find it just a bit, I don't really enjoy anything about it. If I go, in 2018, I went with my girlfriend and two of our mates.
Right.
And we went for 4 days and we watched stuff and I didn't hang out with any comedians and I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to go and work there, I find it really unpleasant. So I always say I'll never do it again, but I'm sure in 2023 or 24, I'll have, like, a thing I want to do up there.
You'll be back, I'm sure.
Yeah, like last time when I went up for Slash, like, my show had enough about it that was different,
which
was the Slash fiction, that it was interesting up there for people, you know, and it had something that wasn't just another person, another white man between 25 and 40 talking, which is a lot of Edinburgh, and I don't want to, it's a waste of money for me if I can just do that. So I would have to have a show rather than just an hour of stand-up. Yeah.
What I find with you, though, is that I would put you in another bracket where you would walk on and say a funny line. Every comedian has to get an audience straight away, but you are a master at gag, 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 gag. Just keep going, battering them with. And that's why I laugh so long at you. The next question I've got is, you are genuinely, as I say, one of my favourite comedians. What do you think makes a good comedian? Have you ever analysed it? Do you not analyse it? You just go and do it?
You know what? So I go through phases where I'm like, what do I need to do? Like, is this? And also, I'll write about something. I'll be like, this is a really funny thing. Like, at the moment, I got a cat last year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen it on social media.
Of course. I've got nothing else to put up on Instagram. And I'm basically, I think they're really funny cats.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of things. I'm doing some, I've not done any online gigs yet, but I'm doing a couple soon. Because I'm like, I'm going to make this funny. And if I can't, like, so I've tried a couple of bits out about the cat and people haven't laughed. And I've kind of gone, so then I go back and I go, what can I do? There must be something, like, I can draw from, you know, there must be, like, a puzzle I can put together with this that makes it funny. But I think it varies from comedian to comedian. I don't think there's any hard and fast rule about what makes a good comic. Like, I know comics who aren't great performers, but it works because they've got a great eye for writing jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, you know, I'm very much, I think it's Gary Delaney says, there's two types of comedians. There's writers who are blagging it as performers and performers who are blagging it as writers. And I'm much more in the second camp.
Yes, yeah, like, yeah. I can see from comedy, your performances, yeah, yeah.
I find it tedious and I hate it. And I really, like, my material turnover is really slow compared to a lot of my peers. So, you know, I've got friends that go to Edinburgh every year and write a new hour.
Yeah.
But then brutally, a lot of those hours I go and see and I go, that was a good 20 minutes in there. Whereas I probably turn over 20 minutes a year.
Wow.
About. And then I kind of have my A stuff and that changes much slower
than
the other stuff. Like, you know, I've got, like, I've got my A tier and my B tier and my C tier and stuff, which I don't like to admit, but there we go. And the C tier, constantly there's new things. But as soon as a C tier thing's good, I work it up until it's in the B, and then slowly the percentage gets lower of how much makes it up. So I'm just much slower moving it up.
Whereas
I've got friends that are like, that'll do. And I'm like, all right. And sometimes I watch people, you know, not to sound like a bitter arsehole, but I watch people on telly and I'm like, I've never seen you do anything funny.
No.
There are people that, especially people that kind of aren't bothered about turning over material, they'll go into a gig where they're being paid money. I have a real problem with doing new material when I'm being paid, or stuff that isn't good enough, because I think, these people have paid for tickets, I'm going to do the best stuff I have.
Irrelevant
of if it's 8 years old or a year old. I'm like, I'm just going to do my best 20 minutes. Whereas some people I know go and do, like, proper gigs where people pay 15 quid a ticket and they're, like, doing brand new 20, or they're like, I'm trying to make this bit work, and I'm like, they've paid for a night out to babysit them. This isn't the time to do that, mate. There are times and places to do it, like ABC.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that means I'm really slow because I'm not brave enough, maybe, or a bit too proud to do badly at a gig. So I'm just doing stuff that works.
I think though it is one of the hardest things you can do and get right, because if nothing else, it's another reason why I think my blogs are positive. If nothing else, you're there willing them to do well, willing a comedian to do well.
Absolutely.
You know, it's going back to what we were saying before.
Over the years, I've done a lot of gigs where I've done a lot of gigs where the audience are acting like, people have come up to me and they're like, you could have tried to make us laugh or whatever. I'm like, I'm trying, like, I'm here and trying. Like, please give me credit for that.
I'm not here to
ruin your evening. Like, yeah. I want this to go well as well. Like, especially early on when you're like trying to get in with clubs and trying to make it your job, people are like, oh, that wasn't very good. And you're like, I wanted this to be like, it's better for all of us if this goes well. Like, I really, there's a lot of comedians, and I almost respect it in some people, where they don't care what the audience think of them. They don't care if the audience, like, if they go away and they're like, the audience is going, oh, well, he didn't try. They're like, who gives a shit what they think? I care so much that I want...
That's the right way.
I have before on stage. I've stood on stage before when a gig's not going well. I'm like, guys, I know you don't think so, but I'm really trying. Okay, I'm giving this everything. This is everything I have. It's not working tonight, but please give me credit.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that's brilliant. Do you prefer comparing, because I've seen you being a brilliant MC, to actually delivering a routine or a show, or again, is there any difference?
I love comparing. I really love comparing. Yeah. And like, weird, I think, compared to some of my peers, I compare a lot. And I still do. Well, I mean, I haven't for a year, but I do compare a lot. And
excellent compare, there is no doubt.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. And I think actually, I think comparing probably plays to my strengths as a comedian.
Yeah.
So like, I'm quite good on my feet.
You're very good with an audience as well. You're very good bantering.
Also, like, I really love, my favourite comedian is, one of my favourite comedians is Jason Byrne.
Oh, you and me both,
What I love about Jason Byrne is Jason Byrne creates all of his shows, and I've seen him do shows. I saw him at Latitude one year where the power went off halfway through his set.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was like a riot. It was phenomenal. Like, how he handled it. And he creates a special event.
It's an incredible hour.
And then I saw him on tour. One of the most inspiring things I've ever seen. When I was kind of first just about pro, and I did a charity gig with him in Oxford. At the New Theatre, kind of a big theatre.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, he was back on tour in the same theatre. And my dad was at the charity gig and was like, oh, I love that guy. Can we go and see him again? He was amazing at this sold-out charity gig. And then at his own tour, it was at like 1,800 seats. There was probably 200 people there, right? Which is a tough gig.
Yeah.
It's freezing in this theatre. And he worked it to make everyone in there, like, he created this special feeling that the audience would have gone away going, that was amazing, even though everything was against him. And he made them feel like it was a unique, special event.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
And I found that really inspiring. Yeah.
I go and see him every year at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And one year stood out where he was on stage doing his routine for about 15-20 minutes, and somebody was late, some bloke was late, and he got in and he moved and he collared him and he dragged him up onto the stage and he rewound the entire show of everything in front of him. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And as a physical comic and with an audience, he's just one of the greatest.
He's amazing, and I find that really inspiring. And I find if you're doing a set, especially like, I mean, I tour a little bit. Like, I don't, like, I do what, like 15, 20 dates a year. I don't do loads of, I'm not doing like big, massive tours, and I'm playing to like 80 to 100 people. And it's quite hard to turn that into a special event for everyone. Like, it's not quite, I've done a few bigger tour dates. Like, I did one a couple of years ago that was like 300 people turn up.
Yeah.
And like, and I've had a couple of those where, for whatever reason, I've sold loads of tickets. And those have always, I've done loads of comparing and tried to do the Jason Byrne thing, and it's kind of worked for me. But if you're doing a club gig, which is the majority of the gig I do, it's easier to have that special moment as a compare rather than an act. Like, it can happen as an act, but
right.
it's harder to do it without treading on. And I don't, and, you know, I'm normally closing. Some yeah. other people have done stuff. You know, that's the last thing. It's the last thing you want is the closer to come in and do everything the compare's done. And well. So I find it. You can create that kind of special. Oh my god, this is really unique to tonight. Moment much easier comparing in clubs, and that's yeah. where I spend most of my time. So I would pick comparing. Probably.
Yeah, brilliant. That's great. When you do your hour shows.
Yes.
Or when you do a longer set, how do you remember the routine? Have you got a specific way of remembering them, or is it fun to go off on a tangent? Or
yeah, I mean, you know what? So, I mean, it's an hour. It's got a linear order for whatever yeah. reason. Like, I would say, so for mine, there are things like they're slightly grouped together.
Yeah.
So I've got, I mean, less so. I mean, I'll pull them apart for like 20-minute sets, but like in my show, there's like 15 minutes about my girlfriend and then 20 minutes about my parents that all sits together as a piece.
Yeah.
So it's like, and in that piece, there's like four routines that just lead off from each other.
Right.
So I don't mind going off on tangents. And also, like, if you're having a really good time, that's where you find a few little extra jokes, which yeah. then you can put in later. But if I'm gigging loads and doing, I really find it hard if I haven't done an hour long show or an hour and 20 minutes or whatever for a while. I struggle to remember it. So, like, I was meant to be going on tour.
Wow.
I was on tour in March, April time. Well, February, I went on tour last year.
Yeah.
And I was only doing, like, 18 dates, like, nothing major. And it was my Edinburgh kind of, like, work in progressy thing, so, like, half old, half new. And when I was doing it in Edinburgh, by the end of Edinburgh, I knew it really well. Like, it was, like, the back of my hand. The first kind of week was a bit rocky in Edinburgh, and then it was fine. And then I waited till February, and the first three shows, I was like, oh, I don't know where this goes. And because I've never written down any of my routines
right.
longhand anywhere or typed them
right.
out. Like,
right.
it is just, like, bits get lost to yeah. history, I suppose.
I think, though, you have pointers, like you say, that you can remember,
you have, like, checkpoints within yeah, routine. Yeah. You go, okay, well, I've hit that bit now. So in your head, you're kind of going, I've done all of that bit in that checkpoint. I can't finish on that routine until I've done these three first.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's people always ask, and I think how you remember it all, but if you write it all yourself, it's kind of easier than if you were reading a script, I think.
Yeah.
You want to memorize that. And I don't have a great memory, so.
Right.
It's all in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And once you get into doing it loads, like once you're doing three a week or four a week, of tour dates, then you just know it.
It's obviously
yeah. It's like a muscle, I think.
Yeah, yeah. To date, what has been your comedy highlight, and what ambitions, if any, do you have as a comedian?
So my comedy highlight. I tell you what, I've done loads of amazing things doing comedy. Like I've been quite lucky. For someone that isn't really considered a comedian by the wider public. But I think one of my highlights is probably I did Nevermind the Buzzcocks when that was still on telly.
Wow.
And that was really cool because yeah. it was a show that I watched a lot.
I saw a recording of it, it was great, yeah.
I've done a lot of television, but yeah. a lot of it is stuff that I'm like, well, I don't even know what that is necessarily. You know, like I do loads of bits and pieces. Like I've done like Hey Tracy this year, and I've yeah. done a few other bits. But because they're quite new shows, when I was like watching comedy obsessively, they weren't around. I used to watch Mock the Week load,
yeah,
Out of 10 Cats, but I've never done those. Whereas Buzzcocks is one of the few of those.
Brilliant!
I've done,
that's fantastic.
That was a real highlight.
Yeah, great.
And
any ambitions?
Yeah, it didn't go very well. Really, it was kind of okay. But I did it. I did it. So that was a real highlight for me. And ambitions in the future wise, well, you know what? The problem is, I think I should be on everything.
Hear, hear.
I think I should be on everything. I think I should be playing all the venues.
Yes.
I don't understand why I'm not. So for example, the Comedy Store have never booked me, ever, right? I did some open spots for
That's
them.
That's amazing.
And they liked me for a while, and then I had a bit of a ropey gig when Don was in. And they're like,
yeah.
No, that's not going to work for us. And I was like, and then I didn't do any gigs for a couple of years, really, because I was kind of on the radio and it meant I couldn't. I kind of had a couple of years where I didn't really do much comedy. So I kind of just left it and never went back to it. And then And then this year, I was meant to go back. I was like, I'd swallowed my pride and I was like, I'm going to go and do an open spot for them. Just because, like, I should be doing a comedy store, like I do every other club in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never gone through the hoops. So no. they you have to do the hoops. And so for me, like, I'd like to do a weekend there, which isn't that ambitious.
Oh, really. Mate, wow.
But also, when I was younger, years ago, I was kind of like, I want to do this and that. But as I've gotten older, I would love to, like, start to, like, tour to slightly bigger venues. Like, I don't make any money on tour, really.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was doing, like, 250 or 400.
Well, it's
people.
So deserved, as I say. You know,
yeah, you know
I mean,
what?
It really is.
I got success very early on.
Right.
Like, I got on telly very early in my career. And I think I did a tour off the back of that. And I wasn't ready to tour, really.
Right.
I did a tour. And it kind of went okay. Like, I'm not saying it was bad, but it wasn't great. And it was hard. And, like, the second leg of it, like, I changed, like, loads of tedious stuff. Like, I changed promoters. Like, they didn't do a very good job. Like, I was playing to venues that were way too big for me that weren't very busy. And it was really demotivating. So then I just left it for years and didn't push it. And I think now I'm a much better comic, but I was, like, 22
yeah.
at the time. So I was very young and didn't really know. Whereas I think I've paid my dues now for the last few years.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
if all of a sudden something landed in my lap that would put me in those, you know, big venues and things, I would be ready for it now.
Yeah,
I don't think
yeah.
I was. You know, if it had happened years ago, I wouldn't have been ready. Whereas
it's all about experience, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so I think now, for example, if, like, a Joel Dommett happened to me and I ended up massive after years of kind of just, like, knocking around,
yeah,
I'm ready for it. Whereas, I would say I've only been ready for it for the last couple of years.
Right.
Like, even though I'm a good comic, like, I just feel, like, in the right headspace. So it doesn't bother me that it hasn't happened. I'm quite mellow about it. If I carry on my career at the level I'm at, which I've kind of been at the same level for years, like 5 or 6 years now, I would be very happy, but it would be nice to step up into the next level of stuff.
Well, from one big fan, please, please, please do.
Well, I'm really trying. I tell you what, I just need like, all you, it's weird, isn't it? Everyone's only one thing away.
I was
reading something about Michael Keaton earlier.
Right,
weird on this subject, because he kind of did Batman in the early 90s and then kind of made a load of average comedies and indie films, and no one really cared about him for 20 years, really. Like, he kind of went into, like, being a C-list Hollywood sort of Jobsworth for 20 years, and then he made Birdman. And got nominated for an Oscar. And there was, this whole article was basically about, there are loads of these really great actors out there who kind of, like, had a bit of heat and then kind of just went to jobbing.
Yeah.
And they're only one role away from that kind of resurgence.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with comics, you know, you're one good Edinburgh or one great panel show appearance away. Because all you need to do, you know, you go on a panel show and you say something that they clip up and it happens to go viral, and then that's you sorted.
And, like, you're away,
It's half the time, it's the things you don't even think that will do that are the things that do, I think, for people. So, you know, I'm not, like, bitter or upset about it, because it's like something will land in my lap one day when I don't even realise it. And, you know, and I'm very lucky that I've spent, you know, 8 years consistently on the television and working lots and, you know, doing all the stuff that you get to do. And having a year where I haven't done it much, I really love it now. You know.
Yeah,
I know, like, oh my God, get me on stage at some guy's as possible.
I was going to move on to that, because, of course, we're all living in strange times. And how have you found online gigs as opposed to live gigs?
I haven't done any.
You haven't done any yet?
No.
You aren't going to do
some?
Yeah,
so I've booked in a couple, basically.
Right.
When everyone was doing it, to begin with, I was kind of like, everyone was jumping on the Zoom gigs. And I was kind of like, I think this isn't going to last that long, so I'm going to step back. And also, I need a crowd. Like, I know, you know, lots of comics I'm friends with, their stand-up is beautiful. It's like a spoken word piece. Like, it stands alone as a piece of writing. I'm very much a, you need to be in the room with me. You know, like, I think a lot of people who see me go, oh, I get it now, once they've seen me live, because of the energy and things like that. So I thought, I'm not going to translate well to that medium, so I'm not going to bother. Now, things like corporate gigs, which I do quite a bit of, because people know me as a presenter.
Yeah.
So I go and do corporates as, like, a presenter that is funny, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, that was great!" Because they don't think I'm a comic.
Yeah.
but they're all going online. So I've started doing online games I think that's the way the world's going to go for a little bit. And that is a chunk of my income.
It's interesting because when I go, for example, to Always Be Comedy, on they do online nights. When they first did them, they have like a front row, which is a Zoom group of people, and then they have the like a webinar, and then the rest of them just watch and are not seen. So the front row is seen. And when it first started, it was all in silence. So I was just sitting here laughing at four walls, and nobody could hear me. And then he decided to switch.
What a waste of the world that is, your laugh.
And then he decided to press the button of the audio, and it took off. Because he's made that front row, that front row people his own.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I think there are people who, like a few people I know, did an hour-long show.
Yeah.
You know, Next Up did like some streamed hour-long show.
Yes, I saw a few of those. And they were quite good.
Like, so Andrew Maxwell did one, and I didn't see it, but I know Andrew. We've got the same agent, and my agent was saying, oh my God, like, it was really good because he did stuff that he couldn't do at a gig normally.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did, like, all this stuff, like, you know, kept changing outfits and things like all this. And I think, look, there are people who are really good at messing with a form of something.
Yeah.
And really thinking outside the box. I don't see myself as one of those people, even though probably I could if I put my mind to it. But I've just sort of ignored that. And I've been lucky enough that I've had a few other little bits going on.
So it's
kind of been fine. And also, for those first few months, I didn't want to do online gigs because I furloughed myself. So I was a bit like, oh, my government money, thank you. No online gigs for me.
No. Plus as well, I mean, you can't beat live because you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely not, no. You know? I think, and you know what? It's one of those things like, I love, obviously, I love stand-up. But I wouldn't go to an online gig. And I'm a big thing of like, I like to do things that I would want to see. Many years ago, this has really struck me and has really stuck with me. Years and years ago, Jimmy Carr did an interview and they asked him who his favourite comedian was. And he went, well, it's me, because it's exactly my sense of humour. And that's a really good point. Like, you know, I know comics who do stuff and they're like, oh God, like I hate doing this bit. And I'm like, do things. I would, if I wasn't me, but I had the same sense of humour, I would pay to see me. Like, that's how I mean. That's a brilliant answer.
But
that's because, like,
that's great.
I wouldn't pay to watch me do a Zoom gig, so I'm not done. I always sort of think, would I like this? And you know what? Over the years, I've done stuff where I've looked back and gone, I don't think I would have liked that if I had my sense of humour and was watching me separately, or I thought, oh, you were annoying on that show or this, and I tried to be better. But I really want to be my favourite comedian, so I don't think I'd enjoy watching me on Zoom. Struck me. I was like, that's a really good point. You should be your own favourite comedian.
That was actually my next question, would you believe? Who are your favourite comedians, past and present, if you've
past
got
present,
any?
Okay, so this really good guy called Matt Richardson, big fan of him.
Of course.
My all-time, so I love Jason Byrne.
Yeah.
I find Jason Byrne like a real, like...
He's brilliant.
When I was first starting out, we kind of did loads of gigs together for a while, so I had the same agent, you know, all those kind of things, that political things, why you work together a lot.
Yeah.
And I found him really inspirational to watch. Like, I learned a lot from him. So I think he's a big influence. And the other one like that is Greg Davies.
Oh, he's superb. Yeah.
Who I think is amazing. And, you know, once again, I'm not friends with Greg by any stretch of the imagination, but like, I know him enough that if we're in a dressing room, we sort of sit and have a chat.
That
will never get not exciting for me.
That's fantastic. Two absolute belters.
Obviously, I mean, you'll have to come when it's back on. But for the last couple of years, well, 2019 and 2018, I put on a charity gig
for
the National Autistic Society at the Union Chapel.
I'll be there, definitely.
And it's beautiful. It's such a good gig. But, like, I book people that I want to see, basically.
Good on you.
So Greg did that for me, and it was amazing. Like, and I was so, like, chuffed that he'd come to do this gig that like means a lot to me. But also, like, I just love Greg Davies. Like,
The persona is he couldn't care less, but it's so intelligent and clever what he says.
It's so intelligent and clever, but also, like, it's a man talking about his mum. Like,
basic,
if you boil it down.
Yeah.
And, like, also, like, it's kind of basically, it's stories. It's stories about your family. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
So I find him, like, once again, a big influence because, like, I think I don't do it to the level Greg Davies does it, but I do what he does.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
brilliant.
This person said this, and then this weird thing happened, and I said blah blah, and like, that's basically what. So, and I think he's the best at that. So I love that.
That's great.
So yeah, those two would be my ones that I love.
That's
I
brilliant.
Think
that's and then, like, really good.
They're sort of the ones above me, but then I find there are people, you know, like Helen Bauer. I really love.
Superb. Yeah, I saw her at Birdies.
Was supporting me on tour before it all ended. She was my support act.
Right.
I thought I'd get in there early, get her to support me, because when she's massive, she'll ask me back. And she, I think she's great. Once again, she's got so much energy on the stage.
Yeah,
like, it's being in a room. She's got presence, like, for days.
Yeah.
So, I love her. Lily Phillips, I love. Who's the opposite, actually, who's really dry.
Lily, I love. Quiet. I've never not liked a show she's done. She's just so... like you say, dry,
and once again, we're quite good mates. And she lives around the corner from me.
Right. I think she's going to do this for me, which is great. So
she's amazing, but but once again, she talks about vaginas loads. So we've got that like I feel a bit of an affinity.
Yeah.
So I like that. And also these days, like I would say I'm probably the rudest act on the circuit. Probably.
I think that's why you're one of the reasons why you're very, very funny.
Thanks. But I would say, like, I mean, you've seen more comics than I have. I'm probably one of the rudest, like, with my material.
Yeah.
So when I see someone else who has rude stuff, I'm a bit like, oh, hey. You know what, I'm going to quote Steve Bennett, and I hate that I'm going to do that. Steve Bennett did a review of me a couple of years ago. I was at the Leicester Comedy Festival Gala, and he deals in a brand of laddish comedy which isn't in fashion anymore, which I sort of think is true. Like men kind of talking about sex was like a big thing in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And now people, like, what's fashionable now is like slightly more unusual and offbeat stuff.
Right.
You know, like, the real... I think, like, you know, the people that are on a level above me of alternativeness...
Yeah.
...are kind of, like, really fashionable and in vogue. Like, the Lou Sanders of the world.
Yes,
the,
yeah.
You know, those kind of people who are great, but it's a very different thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of, like, I'm a bit retro in that
way. Yeah, yeah,
like just
yeah.
Telling slightly laddie stories.
Yeah.
But I quite like that, and I think everything comes back round. But
definitely
I agree.
So yours
I see someone
works,
like Lily who just talks filth like I do.
Yeah.
I'm like, She is
brilliant.
She's great.
Like me, do you go to a lot of comedy gigs as a member of the audience? You did touch on this before.
No.
Not really, no.
Only because I've got this whole thing about I am a sucker for panicking that I'm not working. Basically, because comedy is hard to do, but once you can do it, it isn't so... Like any job, you know, like everyone's like, my job's a joke, because they've been doing it for years. So I gig, when I'm gigging, if I am in a gigging bit, I gig like 6 nights a week, because I'm like, if I'm not gigging, it's not good enough. Like, I need to be... Because I feel so weird that this is my job, I need to create the illusion of hard work for myself. And even if that's like... Sometimes I'll be filming something and I'm like, well, tonight I'm going to Yorkshire to gig and I'll be back for 6 a.m. tomorrow to meet you all. And they're like, you're mental. And I'm like, yeah, but that's how... If I didn't do that, I'd just be like, well, this is a joke. Like, I should be working harder. So I don't see a lot of comedy
because I
try and... And like, I end up doing gigs that I shouldn't do, like gigs that I'm probably way beyond. Like, there's a gig near me, like a little open mic, like a bringer gig where you have to bring two audience members.
Right.
And I did some new material there. I kind of convinced them to let me on. And it was awful. And I was like, what a waste of an evening. But I felt like I needed to be working.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to see much comedy.
No.
Only because I'd be sat there going, I should be at a gig right now. I shouldn't be watching this. I should be at a gig myself.
Should be doing it. Yeah.
So I feel guilty. I've got a lot of guilt about a lot of things, but that is one of them.
Yeah.
But in Edinburgh, I see quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, probably, I won't go to Edinburgh now for another 2 or 3 years.
No.
Like, I'll leave it a while. And so, but I'll probably go for a weekend and go and watch like five shows a day. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
But like in London, I don't go and see gigs.
Unless
I'm sort of like, well, when I was on the radio, because I finished at 7, I would go to gigs with comedian friends of mine that were on if I wasn't really gigging, because I was like, well, I've got a job. I wasn't gigging so much. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, I don't go to loads.
Not as much as
I should. But I do stick around and watch if I'm on at a gig quite often.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And if you're comparing, like I am half the time, you've got no choice but to watch them.
You've got no choice but to watch them.
So I do see a lot of comedy.
Yeah. It's interesting. Again, I've just got one more thing to ask.
Only one. I could talk to you all night.
Could I. It's been so, so good.
It's been lovely.
It's been really great. I just want to ask you, is there anything else you would like to say? Any online gigs coming up? I know you've got a very popular podcast.
Oh, I'm glad you think it's popular.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yourself and Matt Willis, you're hilarious together.
I absolutely love doing that podcast.
Yeah.
So we've done one series of that. It's called When No One's Watching. And it's me and Matt Willis from Busted. Basically talking to people about the weird things they're into, like, you know, unusual habits and the stuff you get up to when no one's watching.
I heard Lily's one in particular.
Lily's is great. What was it about? She enjoys picking up her dog's poo. Her little weird confession. Yeah. We've had some great ones. Desiree Birch told us that when she uses a moon cup for her period and then uses the blood to fertilise her plants.
Lovely.
So a new series of that, I don't know when you're going to put this out, Rich, but a new series of that launches on the 25th of January.
It will be about then. It'll be about a week or two when I put it on YouTube.
We've done like Laura Whitmore, Ed Gamble, Edith Bowman.
Yeah.
Who else have we done? Georgia Steele from Love Island. We've got loads of amazing people. Deborah Francis White. Tons of... Like, we've really nailed the guests this year. Like,
brilliant.
We had good guests first series, but this is even better. And then I also do a podcast about sport called Sports Virgins.
Right.
And it's me and Amy Vost, who is a radio DJ, talking about sports with a guy who's really into it, and we don't know anything about sport. And that's the idea of the podcast. He's like, so this is happening in sport this week? And we're like, I don't know what you're talking about, mate. And that's really good fun as well. So
that's brilliant.
That's it, basically, at the moment. You
say you were going to do one or two online gigs.
Yeah, so I'm doing Lily's online gig in a couple of weeks.
Right.
And I've just booked a few like little things in.
Yeah, just to see how it goes.
Yeah, just to see if it's for me. Because I think, you know, I think it's okay to say that isn't for me.
Yeah.
But you should try it first.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to do that.
Well, as I say, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, mate. Because you...
I can't believe the success of you.
Also, you know what? There is a few people in comedy. There are a few like sort of top tier, sort of 0.1% audience members who go to a lot and are really supportive of the circuit and the industry. There's a girl called Steph who lives in Leicester who goes to like 300 gigs a year. Like, is absolutely into it. And, you know, there aren't loads of people like that, but it is lovely that, you know, you've seen me for many years kind of slowly grow and evolve, and it is really nice. And, you end up with these quasi sort of like, you're not audience members anymore, you're kind of like pals. And it's really nice.
And that's it. It's
a community.
Because I go all around the country watching comedians, it's hilarious when they spot me not based in London. Or I can hear Richard Gill and all this.
Well, do you remember when I did, I think it was in 2017, when I did the Leicester Square Theatre?
Yeah, yeah.
For whatever reason, like, I managed to sell a decent number of tickets in London that year. And there was you there. And I think was there someone else who always be comedy as well? Or maybe I'm not sure.
Maybe my mate was there who'd been, I think I'd met.
Outside the Box in Kingston.
Right.
You know, that gig, Matt Brown's gig.
Yeah.
There was like five people from that, because I used to compare that every other week.
Yeah.
And it was really nice. I was like, oh, you've travelled to see me. I compare a gig in Bracknell, which you need to go to when it's back up and running, called The Comedy Cellar, which is the best gig in the country.
Brilliant.
I compared it for like 5 years. I was like one of the resident hosts. And they always, like, if there's any gigs within 30 miles of there, I'd be like, oh, hello. We've spoken before. And it's a bit like bumping into someone from work, not in work.
It's fantastic. compares or comedians that I know will say to other comedians, Richard Gill's in the audience, you're gonna have a great night, you're gonna have a great night. And if I sit there in silence, that's my
you know what,
it's unheard of.
You know what, there are a few gigs or like there's a few rooms in the country where everyone goes, you can't have a bad gig there, and that's just you're asking for a bit of upset there. There was a gig once, I did a gig, oh God, it hasn't existed for years, but there was a gig in Stroud, this huge gig, and everyone's like, oh my God, it's impossible to die. And I died. I had a really bad gig there. And everyone's like, oh, and you think, actually, like, you shouldn't say that to people, like, Richard Gill's in, oh my God, best laugh in the world. Because if they don't hear, because then you go on and you're like, well, I haven't heard of this fucking laugh. Sometimes I get really, mockingly upset with audience members. Like, if someone's got a great laugh but I don't hear it for the first 15 minutes, I lose the plot. Nice of you to fucking show up. And like, we'll really tell them off for not laughing at me, even though it's my fault.
Well, listen, mate, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. It really has.
What a lovely way to spend an evening.
You're very kind. And all the very best to you. And I will come and see you very, very soon when we're allowed to.
Let's get that vaccine in me.
Definitely.
Get it now, please. I'm gagging for it.
All the very best, my friend. And thank you so much.
Cheers.
All the